Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we are going to have a little bit of a spring recap here. I will stress not so much a recap of the spring game as much as a recap of spring in its entirety. Obviously, having the ability to watch the spring game provides a nice little bookend to the spring practice that seemed a little disjointed this year, perhaps by the introduction of spring break in the middle of it, but a lot for us to discuss, decent idea, or a better idea as to what this team looks like going into the summer, and a decent amount of exposure to prospects that we otherwise had not seen wear a garnet or a white jersey. So a lot to discuss, excited to be able to put this together and have it available first of the week. And as always, appreciate your time and look forward to jumping into this.
Just for in case any news breaks after this, we are recording this at 10:30 on, Sunday night? So 10:30 Sunday night, we're recording. Interesting spring game. As always, thanks to our sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce, for helping us bring you this podcast. A great product. I actually used some this morning on my eggs. Just three simple ingredients. Peppers, vinegar, salt. It's good on everything. It's really cheap. It's fat-free. It's carb-free. If you're looking to cut fat or cut carbs, it works both ways. If you're looking to do both, I mean, obviously, double trouble. Good product. Go use it. Also, somebody sent us an email. There's apparently Louisiana Hot Sauce branded flavored pork rinds out there.
Yes, there are. I can confirm.
I would enjoy some of those.
I'll let the powers that be know, and wouldn't surprise if we didn't come across some of those.
All right. So, like you said, this is not a spring game recap. It's a recap of spring. And the reason why we're not recapping the spring game exclusively is because we talk on a daily basis to people who are at practice, who coach practice, who play in practice, who are parents of players in practice. So I don't want to have one day of practice that happens to be in front of fans known as the spring game. And don't mistake it, it's very much a practice. Like David Visser wrote about for Tomahawk Nation, and we repost that article every year. I don't want that to override what we learned in the last two or three weeks.
It's a good point, Bud. Look, it's very tempting to make too much out of the spring game simply because it's the one thing that everybody gets a chance to see, and it's more of a game-like atmosphere than spring itself or the practices that make up spring. But you're right, you don't want to make too much out of a single play, out of a single series, or what oftentimes you get in spring is you get a scholarship player matched up against another scholarship player that won't see the field for 2 to 3 years or more likely a walk-on, and you just get a very skewed idea as to what that prospect is capable of doing. So have a macro review of spring overall, and with that, why don't we go ahead and jump into it?
I got a couple questions I wanted to bounce off you. Let's start there. I had real trouble determining if practice was really as bad as people were saying they were, or if Jimbo Fisher specifically, and then a trickle-down effect with his coaches, were just exploding, a lot of yelling, a lot of people getting chewed out this spring, a ton, a lot of feelings getting hurt on mistakes that maybe in previous years would not have been considered major mistakes, would have maybe let those slide and focus on the bigger mistakes. It seems like this year, and Fisher discussed this a little bit in his post-game press conference, but it does seem like this year he has gone full tilt micromanager level. Again, like we saw, 2012, especially towards the end of 2012, that worked out pretty good in the 2013 season. Although you also had a QB named Jameis Winston, who was probably responsible for more than that than a micromanager approach. But were there really that many more mistakes? Was practice really that bad? And I think that the answer is somewhere in the middle. Yeah, I do think it was a not a good spring practice period. Personally, I'll ask you this. If I had told you, Ingram, you're going to have some issues with effort, you're going to have a ton of injuries that prevent specifically the passing game from taking a step forward this spring, it's still not a good passing game, and you have so many mix and match things that you're not able to put on a good spring game product. You oftentimes, I mean, you had to cancel practice one day early when guys, too many guys got hurt. Just a boatload of injuries. If I had told you that before spring started, would you have said, yeah, I think that's success?
No, I mean, if I was presented that information, as you just said, I would have a hard time classifying spring as a success. We may have a little bit of a divergence of opinion here. I personally think it was a successful spring just because of reasons 1 through 5 would be the fact that you didn't sustain any significant injuries, any injuries that are going to prevent you in preparation for Alabama or the beginning of the season as a whole. I'll also point out that you have the emergence of Cam Akers. We've talked about a good length. I won't go on too much at that. I feel like you have to be not necessarily confident, but okay with the fact that you have what appears to be a second-string quarterback emerge in Hawkman. And some of the pieces that you had on defense, particularly some of the younger members of the secondary, very much came in and have put themselves in a place to challenge for playing time. So not a unmitigated success, not an unmitigated disaster, in my opinion. But on the whole, I would lean slightly more towards a successful spring than a disappointing one.
I think that's fair. In that regard, and especially with the point that you made about the spring not suffering any serious injuries in spring. So these guys are going to be able to get back fairly quickly and get into the off-season weight program and hopefully make some strides in that program. Obviously, you're facing the most talented, the most physical team in college football in week one, which Jimbo Fisher spoke about this actually during the spring game about how it does help you keep your focus in the offseason if you realize you have that great test opening up week one. Now, he kind of mentioned it, like, yeah, we've done so with Alabama, but also with Ole Miss. I don't really think that those are the same type of motivation, but it would be really interesting to see how that plays out. We'll jump right into quarterback, I guess. You mentioned maybe a new backup quarterback potentially in Bailey Hawkman. I got to agree with you, man. I think he has talent. I think he came in with something you've been on for quite a while, that he has a very high floor, unlikely to be a bust, and look fairly good in the spring game, which had kind of mirrored what we had heard throughout the spring.
You just you don't want to make more out of a couple series of plays than you should, but what I saw in the spring game very much echoed what I heard from practice and also what I saw from him in 3 years of starting at McEachran. Just a kid with a lot of savvy, just comfortable in what's asked of him and comfortable in playing the position. And a guy that, again, I don't want to make too much out of it, but a guy who I think you certainly have to feel more confident than what you've seen with JJ so far. I don't want to just bash JJ, but what you saw in the spring is a continuation of everything else you've seen from him in his career. I'll give him credit. He can throw that kind of intermediate slant or that intermediate post route. Other than that, it's a little bit daunting whenever JJ goes back for a pass. And, you know, I think you said a couple weeks ago, and it's a great point, and it's something that we'll probably mention with one of the running backs in particular. But a lot of these guys we talk about, we mentioned, you know, look, he could go to XYZ school and play, and maybe he should. I just don't know if that's the case with JJ. So no progression at all throughout his career. And at this point in time, I think you have to be fairly confident in saying that Bailey Hawkman's your number two entering the summer and more than likely entering the first game of the year.
I think I agree. I mean, obviously, depending on what game it is. But, yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. Ingram, pressure was a pretty big issue in this ball game. We'll talk about the offensive line in a minute. Hawkman took 0 sacks on 11 dropbacks. Francois, 5 on 24. JJ, 7 on 29. We'll talk about the starter. 13 of 28 for a .133. That's 4.75 yards an attempt. That is terrible. No way around that. Passing game looked like crap.
It did. It did. You have to run that through the filter of how many wide receivers you're missing and who he's throwing to. But yeah, not a whole lot of sugarcoating that you can put on the stats that you just mentioned.
I mean, 4.75 yards an attempt would probably be worse than all of college football among qualified passers if you put that in a year. I mean, that's horrible. But not all of it was his fault. In fact, I think Francois had a couple good passes that were dropped. He also had a couple that were just inaccurate, and he had a couple times where he had an open guy and just didn't see him. It was a processing error. And usually, I don't think he processes incorrectly. Usually, I think he just processes slowly, right? He had a couple of processing incorrectly errors in that game, but made some good throws. And I think at this point, if you view him through the lens of he's a redshirt sophomore quarterback who is not an elite talent, he's got some skills, and he's coming along. And I think maybe this year he can step up and go from a decent quarterback to a good quarterback. I love watching the guy. I mean, he's tough as hell, and that's a great quality. But as we've said often on this podcast, you can't tough the ball to the receiver. Now, he's throwing a walk-ons a good bit, and you know that's not what he's going to be throwing to in the regular season. I think Tate and especially Gavin are going to make plays on the football for him. We discussed that on a recent show. Maybe a little more touch, though. That was encouraging to see, I guess.
Yeah, a decent amount of touch at times. We both like Francois. Personally admire his toughness, admire some leadership characteristics that he has. There's just times where he makes mistakes that you would hope would be out of his game. So, you know, a real important summer for him, as it is for everybody on the team. But hopefully is able to get together with his wide receivers, work on his footwork, which is something that we talked about for a little bit of time a couple podcasts ago, and be as sharp of a product as he can coming out of the gate. Not a whole lot to really take from Francois, not just from the spring game, but from spring as a whole. Everybody I talked to said there might have been some mild progression there, but not a real day or night change. No great leap forward, absolutely not. So I think we have an idea as to what you're going to get there. Hopefully some of the smaller things that we've discussed he can improve upon, do a couple small things right, those add up. But I don't think you're going to see a guy be a wildly different product than what we've seen from the first year of him starting.
Which brings me to an overall point, and we had a discussion on this today on Tomahawk. This needs to be a running football team because you don't have an accurate quarterback, because you don't have receivers who run real precise routes, at least not consistently, because you have a hell of a stable of running backs, mm-hmm. and because your offensive line is a lot better at run blocking than pass blocking. For all these reasons, Ingram, this needs to be a running football team, and it needs to be a team that is all in on the run game and is actually running its quarterback too. I think if this team is going to do what people wanted to do, which is for the first time without Jameis Winston, lose less than two games, right? Maybe go undefeated or only lose one, have a legitimate shot at the playoff. They need to run the football a lot, and they need to threaten the defense with all 11 players on the field in the run game consistently. We'll see if that happens, but I think that throughout our conversation that'll become pretty clear.
No better segue there than to move to the running backs. Cam Akers, nothing but basically all the hype was confirmed. Really a different level prospect. The burst on Akers is just silly from what you've seen. Incredible physical skills, certainly a lot to improve upon. Didn't necessarily bat 1,000 when it came to finding the right hole, and you're not going to expect that from a kid who would otherwise be a senior in high school. But all the raw ability in the world, and all the reason to think that all the things we heard behind the scenes were true, and a guy that you just have to be really confident that you potentially have one of the more special players from that class in your backfield, and a guy that by all count, is going to be your starter at running back come game one.
And I think Nolcast listeners have known that for a while, by the way, that he had all the talent in the world, that he had a real good chance to start game one. Hell, last episode, we spent probably 10 minutes on him, talking about what a great camp he had had. You know, the guy that actually might have excited me a little more, and I get that fans are going to be more excited about Akers because this is the first time they've seen him, but it's not mine. Patrick.
Yeah.
Jonquez Patrick, man, ran hard, ran behind his pads, picked through traffic a little bit. I'm liking that. If he's your number two, there's not a whole lot of teams that have a better number two in college football. There's a couple, but there's not a lot.
Jonquez Patrick, I mean, we discussed when we were able to record last week, I was really blown away by what you saw from him last year and then how little you saw of him last year. Really an intriguing prospect that if it wasn't for a freshman from Mississippi, we would be discussing how we feel pretty confident as far as what Florida State has as its number one. As you mentioned, that's probably going to become your number two. To piggyback off another pack point you made, it's a great example as to why this needs to be a running football team, and what a great complement and pieces that complement each other as far as running styles. When you can put an Akers out there, and then all of a sudden put a fresh Patrick out there. I love the process. I love the running back that Patrick has turned into, the evolution of prospect into player. And he does all the things that we really wanted to see from him as far as becoming more comfortable being the running back that maybe his body would allow him to be. So real physical player and done a particularly good job of getting comfortable running behind his pads. And I am very, very excited as far as what you're going to get from Patrick this year.
I really, and I'm interested in this because Jimbo clearly had a conversation with Rex Ryan, right? The color commentator, former head coach of the New York Jets in the booth. And basically Ryan echoed that Jimbo had told him he wants Patrick to run even more physical. And to be honest, I thought Patrick ran more physical last year. So maybe this is just one of those examples of Jimbo continuing to challenge a player who he thinks has real potential and real talent to get better. Because it doesn't it kind of seem to you like Jimbo just doesn't like Patrick's game? Like based on the playing time he got last year and some of the comments he's made about him?
I would say that that's really one of the only conclusion you can come to. I mean, if you didn't get to hear our podcast a week ago, we would encourage you to listen to any Nolcast, of course. But I would go back and listen to that. We talked about Patrick for, I think, 7 or 8 minutes. And kind of the mystery as to why we didn't see more of him last year, particularly with the way he played, with just some of the performances he put together. He, at a brief period of time there, was Florida State's better running back, in my opinion, before Dalvin fully came back from whatever it was that was bothering him. So I was pretty mystified as to why we didn't see much of Patrick. So yes, both in playing time and some of the comments that Fisher has made about him, it just appears as though there's something that either doesn't sit well or sit right, or that he is very much trying to use a public comments to get more out of a player than he otherwise is.
And he certainly does that at times. I thought fullback Gabe Neighbors was physical. That was good. I mean, I heard that already, but I like to see that in the game. We'll see how his feel for the position comes on. That'll probably determine how much two tight ends and how much I formation FSU runs. But it's really nice to have him as an option. And going forward, I could see him 2018, 2019 becoming a very good player, potentially. And we didn't get to see Amir Rasul. Obviously, he's been hurt often. You know, Ryan Green, man, had another nice couple runs. And this to me, man, there's probably 6, 7, 8 players on this team who can't play for Florida State, right? Based on not their own ability, but just the ability of guys who are ahead of them just better. But they could definitely go. I had a conversation today with the scout, and he's like, wouldn't Ryan Green start at FIU? Or, if he went and played for Travis Trickett at Georgia State as a grad transfer or anywhere you know, in the Sun Belt or in the AAC, he'd probably be a star in that league. Yet now he's third string at best. Like, why? I don't know. This to me, I want to see guys be able to play and use their talents. And sitting on the bench as a senior, as a fifth-year guy, I don't know, man. It's your last shot, unless you think the NFL is a legitimate thing.
This was particularly the prospect that I was referring to when we talked about JJ a couple minutes ago. I really, you know, like during the course of kids being on campus, you tend to find some that you root for maybe than more than others. And Green for me is very much that. I would love to see him do great things in a Garden Gold jersey. I'm not sure that's ever going to come to fruition. I'm right there with you. If that kid can transfer and go play somewhere, he would be a star in the Sun Belt. He would be a great piece for a program like Georgia State. Obviously, that's up to him. I wish him the best of luck, but that is a kid who is pretty talented, and unfortunately, that doesn't look, at least currently, like that talent is ever going to really get a chance to be displayed all that much in Tallahassee.
So, I mean, and there's a lot of kids, not a lot, but there's a good handful of kids who are like that. Receiver, man, there's not much to take away from this spring. You had guys constantly out. Campbell was always hurt. Gavin, you know, was out most of spring. I did get a pretty good chuckle at Gavin in a green jersey blocking the heck out of some guys.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys caught that, he didn't play much in this game. They pulled him pretty early. But him blocking, you know, hard was good. I think Gavin's a physical freak, and if he can continue to progress, I expect big things out of him. You know, Nunu Murray. Did you catch what Jimbo said when asked about how Nunu Murray's spring was?
Yeah, I did. I haven't been particularly impressed with Nunu.
Coded language, man.
It is, and what you're referring to is him describing him as solid, or his spring as solid. Nooney's just got to, he's got to be better. He's so talented. Obviously, we've seen that. But he's got to be more consistent, and he's got to give a damn on plays where he isn't positive he's going to get the ball thrown his way. So you get an idea as to why you didn't see a whole lot of him in the first half of the year. There's just some things that Nunu has to clean up if he's really going to be the player that he can become. Certainly hope he does. All the talent in the world, and a guy who is poised to potentially have a breakout season. But he's got to have more consistency in his total game and what he brings to practice, in my opinion, for that to really be displayed on Saturday.
It's getting over the selfishness, right? It's being willing to block. It's don't consistently be the guy that the coaches have to yell at for not running a route with effort because you don't think the ball is going to come to you on a specific play. Because that happens a lot. If you need this guy to be your go-to receiver who's going to be your best route runner, and I think he probably will be as far as best route runner, those routes need to be run consistently because you don't necessarily know if the ball is going to go to you. This is not an offense where they sit in a huddle and say, okay, I'm definitely throwing this to you. Coverage dictates where the ball goes. So you at least need to run the route hard until you're real sure that the ball is not going to come to you. It's just a maturity thing, you know, and we'll see what comes of that. Devontae Phillips supposed to have the best hands on the team, but he really didn't show it on Saturday in the spring game. You know, had two drops, I think. You know, it is what it is. I'm not expecting much out of him at this point in his career. Trey McKitty, I did like him. I know you were a fan of him coming out as well.
Yeah, McKitty, I thought, had one of the better games. A lot to be excited as to what he can eventually become. Not sure that's necessarily going to be something that we see in 2017, but a nice little piece there. A guy that you have to be pretty positive as to his potential and would be well served to spend 12 to 18 months with Vic and the strength and conditioning staff. But I think that's something that you can have you can kind of stash away as a positive and something that you could expect to be a nice asset for you 2 to 3 years down the road.
I think these tight ends are going to be really good for FSU. I mean, Izzo and Saunders, I think McKitty is going to push Upshur immediately. Like, he actually, it wouldn't shock me if he passes Upshur, personally. I think McKitty has more physical ability.
I agree. I like his frame more than Upshur. I just don't know that that's something with the two guys that you mentioned that we'll see immediately. I think Izzo's one of the better tight ends that's played here in the past 10-15 years. Certainly he's got ways to go and can make some improvements, but that is a really, really good college tight end. And Saunders is somebody that we've raved about his physical talent since day one, and the end of last year gave you more confidence that he was going to make more out of that talent and not just be an ex-basketball player who can flash in practice. So I think those two are really great pieces, and barring injury, knock on wood there, I expect those two to consume the vast majority of snaps at tight end.
Ingram, it's time for a little offensive line talk.
Let's do. And, you know, when we were sitting there talking about if the practice as a whole was a success, I was a little bit disappointed in myself because the metrics that I told you at the beginning of the spring I was going to use as to whether or not this was a successful spring, I didn't reference at all. So by that, when we first started discussing spring, I told you the things that were going to matter the most to me were what you saw from the two tackles and what you saw from the interior, meaning the center. Kind of a mixed bag there. I like what you have there. Your tackles are a hell of a lot better in run than they are in pass protection right now, which lends itself to the overall macro idea of this being a team that really needs to rely on its running game. But I was pretty upbeat by what I saw from the center position in particular.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here. You know, Bavion Johnson, we had heard that in the beginning of spring had some kind of issues with the snaps. Obviously, Baselli did too. Everybody getting hurt up front, apparently. Jimbo was, I think he said that Bavion thought he was Jack Lane or something with a trampoline injury early on, but fought through it. I liked his leverage, man. He's leaned out some, which is good. He's able to bend a little better. He's a little bit quicker. I like that he's actually getting a little bit more movement at the point of attack. He's always been a guy who, you know, I want to see a mean streak out of him. He's always actually been a pretty good pass protector as a center as far as the ability to anchor against the bull rush.
I think the snap is probably the thing that I was the most positive about. And look, I don't want to minimize what you just mentioned. He has made some really nice progress, both in his frame and giving himself a legitimate chance to play ball, but also being more explosive immediately after the snap. I like his hands more so than what I heard his ability to use him when he was first got on campus. He's just a more refined prospect, which you would expect after a year. But Bavion is a guy who I would, at this point, I would hope becomes your starting center. Certainly a much higher ceiling than some of the other prospects that dominate the conversation of playing time at that position. And more importantly, we've always known about his ceiling. I think after this spring, you have to be a little bit more comfortable as to what his floor is. That's a much more refined prospect than he was. And personally, that is a guy who I hope is your opening day starter at center.
I completely agree with you. I want to see him as the starting center. And if he's not, I'm going to be disappointed, not in like a coach's decision, but disappointed that he wasn't able to continue to taking steps. Because I think right now he's got a pretty good shot at it. You know who I think is going to start and is not up for debate? Cole Minshew, man. You could see why the coaches were mad when he was fat, like too bad to play. And you could see how they were so frustrated when he would get concussions. Because damn, when that dude is not like super overweight, and when he's not concussed, he is as talented as any guard FSU has had under Jimbo Fisher. And that includes Rodney Hudson, I think.
He is just, and not that this is unsuspected when you look at him, but he's just so damn powerful. And a guy that once he gets his hands on you, and if he's got his hands anchored on you in the right place, it's over. Now, obviously, that may not be the case against some of the better teams we play, but he is very much in a place to be one of the more dominant pieces of that offensive line. always going to have concerns with injuries with Cole, and you referenced some of the head concerns, but if Minshew's healthy and Minshew's able to play, you can pencil him in as starter, and you can expect, in my opinion, if healthy, an all-conference type, first or second team level of play from him. So I think you've got to feel probably as confident in the end product in Minshew as anybody that you have on the offensive line right now.
And don't forget his other line mate at the other guard spot, assuming he comes back healthy from his ACL, Landon Dickerson, who might be the most talented offensive lineman on the team.
Dickerson was, it was great that he was able to get some of the experience that he did last year. And he certainly took his lumps, and he was either really great or a massive liability at times. But you could see the raw talent there, and that's a good point that you made. Let's not forget about him as he recovers. And you've got a hell of a pair at guard. So center, we've discussed guard. We have a pretty good idea as to who those players are going to be, and ultimately the level of play that you can get from them if they're healthy. And with that, Bud, let's move to the offensive tackles that maybe is not quite as certain at this time.
Do we have to?
I do believe we have to.
All right. Obviously, didn't see Rick Leonard in the spring game, but I think he had a good spring. Josh Ball, on the other hand, on the other side, I heard so much about how much he was struggling in pass protection, and we certainly saw that in this game. But I think something that was actually undersold to me by my sources, Ingram, was his ability in the run game. And he played for a running offense in high school, so he was always a pretty good run blocker. But I didn't realize that he was as good of a run blocker, at least as he showed in the spring game. Now, granted, he's blocking Janarius Robinson and Josh Kando sometimes, so those are guys with talent, but they're very raw. But at least they're his same age. Now he's going to face a lot better talent than that in big-time games when he faces Bama, Clemson, Miami, maybe Florida, in NC State. But I got to say, very happy with his run blocking. I thought he got out, sealed the edge well, used his length, didn't get too high when he was blocking, which is always an issue or a potential issue when you have a 6'7" dude out there. But the pass blocking is still an issue and is one of the reasons why I'm saying this needs to be a running football team, because he is not a good pass blocker. Not yet.
Not yet. Not yet.
And I really don't think Rick Leonard is either, by the way. Not yet.
No, Leonard's not. He's not. I think we know enough about it that he's not there yet. So a Ball is ridiculously athletic when you talk about an offensive tackle prospect. A lot of reason for optimism in the long run, but a guy that's a lot better in the run game than he is in pass protection. So you got 4 months to try to get that as refined as possible. All of these guys, as we mentioned, nobody sustained any type of injury. That's not going to allow them to have as productive a summer as possible in the weight room. And you hope that the line is able to have the type of summer that's needed. It is one of the large pieces that ultimately is going to dictate whether or not you have a nice season or whether you're able to have the type of season that that some people are talking about. The offensive line is perhaps, in my opinion, the biggest variable there. It's also the place in the team that probably has the most room for improvement and is one of the only places on this team that I think you can at least have realistic, not necessarily an expectation, but have a realistic opportunity for a significant jump from now to August. So not the greatest showing in spring overall, some mixed bag in the spring game itself, but you certainly have a better idea as to what the interior offensive line is going to look like, hopefully anyway. And you have some things to work on and some things to work with at the offensive tackle position.
Also, we can pretty much guarantee that the performance in games will not be worse than what you saw in the spring game, because I don't think anybody out there has a set of pass rushers like Florida State has, personally.
Certainly. Brian Burns is, again, you don't want to make too much out of a spring game itself, but when what you see in the spring game pairs with what you've heard from the rest of spring, then that's a kind of a an opinion that you feel more confident in. Burns has, it's not like he's put on some massive amount of weight, but he's put on some good weight. Looks like he's put on some good lower body weight in particular. And a guy that's just a pass rushing, is just a massive weapon. And it'd be great to be able to pair him with Sweat and see what you can do there. But Burns was a guy that stood out immediately, as you would expect him to, and is going to be one of the real reasons for optimism from a team overhaul, but particularly your defensive line and what you get from your defense and the ability to rush the passer.
Speaking of that defensive line, that is a smooth transition, man. Obviously, Josh Sweat with a knee and Derek Nnadi with a calf did not play in this game. We got a question on the last Nolcast about the depth of Florida State's defensive tackles for the 2018 and 2019 seasons, which is certainly like a hashtag hardcore listener question, you know, for people to be thinking about next year's D-tackle depth when we haven't even played this year. But I gotta tell you, man, Darvin Taylor overcoming that shoulder injury, looking athletic and strong. Cedric Wood, when he played low, looked real strong. I'm very encouraged by these young defensive tackles. And you had a guy on the sideline in Marvin Wilson, who's the number one defensive tackle prospect in the country, who signed with you and is not even on campus yet.
Yeah, you're going to be good at defensive tackle. We talked a decent amount about the three kids that you did sign last year. The emergence of Wood was nice to see. Darvin Taylor, very much echo your sentiments there. And to bounce back outside, look, number 11, Janarius Robinson, he's not a finalized product by any means, but really liked what I saw out of him. A guy who's also looked like he's put on some nice weight, a guy who just looks like an absolute freak of an athlete, and certainly one of the people that you want getting off your bus first when you go travel. But that is a guy who looks more comfortable with what's being asked of him and is still raw, but still has added weight and has maintained some of the fluidity, some of the athleticism that makes him special. That is going to be a really good third option at defensive end, and a guy that I expect to see more and more snaps as the year goes on, and a guy that can be really successful in a rotation. So I think Burns and Robinson could be a nice tandem, and I'm excited what the future holds for Janarius.
I agree with there. It was good to see him take some step forward, because he was certainly swimming in year one, and oftentimes reports where that practices for him were kind of rough. Josh Kando, your number one defensive end in the country, five-star, comes in. Now, he's also swimming a little bit, and by swimming, I just mean a lot of information being thrown at these guys, and even if you play at IMG, the variation of defenses that Florida State plays, that's a lot for a freshman to adjust to. It still shows some good athleticism, shows some good strength at times. The one thing that you would notice with Kando, if you just focused on him, and I did for, I don't know, maybe about 10, 15 snaps, he exposes his entire chest to be blocked, right? What he needs to do is basically attack a half man, keep the outside arm free if he has contain. A couple times when those runs were bounced to the outside, it looked to me, and I don't know what the defensive play call was, but it's not that hard to figure out general responsibilities if you know what you're doing. Kando let his outside arm kind of dip to the inside too much, and he was easily blocked there. One-time ball got him really good. I think Izzo popped him another time. Kind of welcome to college football, freshman, right? But we know he's a real elite talent. It'll come along. The Florida State is extremely well-stocked on the defensive line. Hell, I was debating this with somebody the other day. Fred Jones, is there a number three or number four defensive tackle on this football team? How many other teams would he not start for nationally?
Jones is a great piece, and we've talked a lot about the luxury. If he's your third or fourth option, that's a great thing to have. And Jones is somebody that I've admitted this ad nauseum. When he was being recruited, the only reason I thought he was being recruited was because of his last name and who his father and his uncle were. He's come on campus. He's worked his rear end off, and he's turned into a really, really solid player and a guy who we talked about Wood, we talked about Taylor, Let's not forget about Fred Jones, and that is a that's a piece that you'll rely on throughout the year, and a great just a, another great reminder as to the ability of Odell Haggins. Now, personally, I've heard a couple people tell me that Jones has benefited from the presence of Brad Lawing as well. But look, when that's a prospect who was not a great high school player, not a particularly good high school player at times, and has turned into a really solid contributor for Florida State. So hats off to Odell, hats off to Lawing, hats off to whoever it is, probably most responsible for that is Jones himself. And that's a great little piece to have, and somebody that we probably overlooked from our immediate review of the defensive linemen.
From the defensive linemen to the linebackers, I would say a little bit discouraging overall. We don't see Matthew Thomas in the spring game. Don't know what's going on there. Last episode we discussed our immediate concern that we had anytime the words Matthew Thomas and academics come up, which they did. Out of Jimbo Fisher's mouth about a week ago when said he was missing a practice because he had an academic thing, had to go take a test, I believe was the comment. He doesn't play. I'm actually going to go kind of positive here, though, Ingram, and that's a talk about Jacob Pugh, a linebacker, outside guy, you know, not the traditional linebacker role, more that jackbacker role. You know, wins the MVP of the spring. I love seeing that. A guy who's been in the program a while. And to be honest, I had somebody ask me one day, do you think this guy loves football? And I said, what do you mean? And this guy's involved in the program. He's on salary. And he said, I just don't know if this dude loves football. But Jimbo Fisher kind of addressed this recently. And you know, he said, look, the light bulb just came on. And some guys just kind of realize this, you know, it's their last ride. It's time to turn it on. And you got a chance to make some real money in this game. Let's play to the best of your ability. Now, you don't like to see that guys waiting to turn it on. You'd rather have them turn it on and you know, go all out all the time from the word go when they step on campus. But at least it's happening now. And I like
him.
He's a very talented guy.
He is, and I don't want to interrupt you, but I do want to comment on what you just said. And I think to an extent When you get on campus and you immediately play, and you immediately play on a team that's as talented as the 2014 team, that maybe you think it's going to be easier than it actually is. Maybe you think that you're like, oh, well, I was a partial starter as a freshman. I had some big moments and really important games. You know, this is easy. This is not going to be maybe the challenge that some people made it out to be. And maybe you don't take your summer before your sophomore year as serious as you would. Maybe some of that blends in to your sophomore year as a whole. I think that in a way, it's great to get experience as a freshman and it's great to get an opportunity to play, but maybe you can convince yourself that this process is going to be a little bit easier than it actually is.
That's a great point. You know, I wonder how many guys on this roster that point actually applies to. It might be more than just one.
So that was a really positive note of spring, definitely. Other than that, a little disappointed in where we are at linebacker, to be perfectly honest. Dontavius Jackson didn't have a great spring. Not that it was horrible and not that he's not going to be a player, but a guy who didn't make the leap forward that some would have hoped for or could have had a reasonably decent expectation of.
Jimbo called him out.
Yeah, he did. Multiple times, in fact.
Look, I think that's because he knows Dontavius can be so much better than he is, right? The guy's got instincts. The guy's got size. Maybe too much size, by the way, right? Like, he did look kind of big in that spring game. You know, maybe conditioning could be improved there. We'll see how that works in summer drills. You don't see Jimbo typically call out dudes in the media who he doesn't think have another level to their game they can reach, right? Like, he doesn't really call out JJ in the media. I think he just thinks JJ is what he is. And so he's like, oh, he's fine. You know, he's solid, whatever.
Yeah.
I think he wants Dontavius to take a leap, but I totally agree. The leap has not been taken yet.
It hasn't. Shamar Kilby Lane, not a whole lot to comment about there. Nice to see him back from that injury, but
some physicality. I'll say on that one. I watched this, the spring game actually right before we hit record tonight again. When he knows where he's going, he arrived with bad intentions. The problem is the bad plays are really bad because he looks lost too often, right? So that's concerning. You know, he obviously was academically ineligible last year, which is terrible. Want to make sure it doesn't happen again. But, you know, that not really where you want him to be. And then Hoskins, you know, wasn't anything special.
I got linebacker and ankle injuries confused in my mind. You're right there. As far as Lane's academic ineligibility, but yeah, you didn't see a whole lot from Hoskins either. Emmett Rice, maybe a little bit of reason to be optimistic there. Certainly, a lot of what he doesn't have in size, he makes up for a pretty agile, pretty quick linebacker, but. I have some, for the most part, pretty optimistic from what the team did as a whole in spring. We talked about that at the beginning. We may have a little bit of a difference of opinion, but I am concerned about linebacker and what we have there and what we're ultimately going to look like. And as long as there's some ambiguity surrounding this Matt Thomas situation, that is something that I'm just would like to be resolved sooner than later. I'll put it that way.
I agree. Defensive back?
Happily. Let's happily move
to defensive back. Let's talk about DBs. This is a good conversation to have.
Derwin James, I think he's going to be a decent football player. I do. I think that's going to be a guy that you can get some productive play from.
Yeah, he seems to be good at the running and the tackling and the intercepting.
The tackling.
And the fumble forcing. And
yeah,
the sacking and the pass rushing and the coverage, all from the different spots of the field. That looked like you had borrowed an NFL player for the day.
It did. It also looked like a guy who might have put DeAndre Francois in a coffin a couple times had he been able to actually tackle him. Good Lord, Derwin James. I mean, that is a man, just let him be healthy. Let us as a fan base, and it's not too often that I go complete fanboy on this podcast, but I desperately want to see what a healthy, pretty fairly experienced version of Derwin James looks like. I really think that's one of the more dynamic players that's played here in the past decade, and I yearn to see a full year of healthy Derwin James and what that actually looks like.
And I think that if he is have a full year healthy, you're going to drop the word in the last decade from the sentence, one of the more dynamic players who has played here in the last decade. It's just going to be who has played here.
Played here, full stop, period. Absolutely.
And we're probably going to look back on his career if he does what we think he's going to do, which is have a great junior year and then obviously go pro or redshirt sophomore, whatever you want to call it, year number three. And the only thing kind of, I think, separating him, if he has that year, from being like the ultimate pantheon of FSU defenders, is that he only played two games last year. You know, he's missing that kind of middle year of elite performance because of his injury.
Yeah, I don't want Derwin James to be this generation's Antonio Cromartie. Now, you've already gotten more out of James than you did Cromartie, but Cromartie was one of the most ridiculous athletes to play at Florida State. And, I mean, what, didn't he have a scoop and score against Miami one year or something like that? But other than that, you never really saw it. You had to wait until he was a San Diego Charger before you saw what Crow actually was. That's me knocking on wood, and here is to a healthy Derwin James. And, again, I talk about this a lot. Derwin James is the type of prospect that can impact your program for the next 5 or 7 years because of what he can be, how many kids want to be Derwin James. That can help you in many a recruiting battle. That just has an opportunity to be a transcendent player and one of the better defenders, one of the better players, whatever accolade you want to put on him. Derwin can be as special as he wants to be while during his time in Tallahassee.
And he looked like he was having fun out there, too. And that was good to see because that injury wrecked him last year, man. You could see it really bothered him how the defense was playing when he wasn't out there.
Well, If I was able to play college football, Bud, at 6'3", 228, and hit like a damn middle linebacker and cover like a cornerback, I'd have a pretty big smile on my face as well. So good for Derwin. Enjoy it.
You know, we really got some things right in the last podcast when people were asking which young guys were standing out. I believe we said Stanford Samuels III looked like he really belonged.
Looks like an absolute player. Absolutely. That's a solid four-star prospect you sacked there out of Sanford, Florida. So,
yeah, four-star. Come on. Rex Ryan had a great line on that. Did you catch what he said?
About
Samuel's ranking?
I didn't. I did catch where he said Jabril Peppers wishes he was half the player of what Derwin James was, though. That's a strong line. Strong line there, Rex.
He also said on Derwin that he wishes he hadn't got run out of the NFL so early so that he could stay around the draft.
He could have a chance to coach him. Yeah, I did hear that as well.
But no, on Stanford, he said something like, who the hell were the six cornerbacks rated ahead of this guy in high school? Which, you know, was kind of our question too. I didn't think he was the seventh best corner in the nation, but, you know, whatever. Speaking of corners, Kyle Myers, I thought, looked pretty good. I think he is likely the front runner to win the starting corner job opposite of Tavares McFadden when McFadden gets back from his injury.
Agree. Myers is a guy that I would not have thought that he, a year ago, if you would have asked me, I would not have thought that he would be nearly as heavily involved as he is as far as how much playing time. But a guy who, in the final four or five games of last year, emerged, and you've got to be fairly comfortable with that. I mean, look, I don't want to knock a kid, but Marquez White did not have a great year at all last year. It was much better year prior than he was in his final year in Tallahassee, and I think you can not necessarily be like egregiously optimistic to expect that you can get a higher overall level of play from your corners this year. And Myers is a really nice prospect who continues to improve. And the amount of ultra-talented kids you have in this secondary that are in either their first or second year on campus is just ridiculous how talented that group is overall, but particularly how much young talent there is.
I completely agree with that. Cyrus Fagan also made a couple nice plays there in the spring game, had a nice big hit along the sideline. A guy who I'm rooting for because I want to see him come back because he's had a multitude of injuries and he willingly changed positions last year when FSU needed some help. Ermin Lane did not look good to me. Maybe a little rusty coming off that foot injury. Some of these angles that he was taking in the run game, little suspect, Ingram. You know, the first run by Jacquez Patrick should probably be like an 8-yard run, not a much longer one. Rooting for Ermin, not the best spring game, but we'll see. He's a guy coming off a legit injury. I remember he wasn't even necessarily supposed to be a full spring participant. So kind of pumping the brakes on that. But, yeah, you know, people are asking us on the Twitter account and on the email, did you guys see Ermin Lane? What'd you think? And the implication there is sort of, man, he kind of sucked. Yeah, okay, fair. But we saw what he did when he was healthy last year, and he wasn't bad. I'm only giving the kid the benefit of the doubt that he's going to come back and play better once he's, you know, had his foot under him for a month. And then I think Levante Taylor has a decent chance to be your star.
All right, bud. Hopefully that's been a good little review as to what we took from spring with some particular observations from the spring game parsed in. Want to always thank our friends at Madison Social who make podcasts like these possible. We mentioned last podcast that we're trying to work towards a event at Atlanta for the Alabama game. We'll certainly keep people up to date with that. You know, frequently we refer to them as Madison Social just as that was the first group that was with us, but want to remind people of all three options, one being Madison Social, the other Township, and then their Italian-themed Centrale. So great options, great what they've done particularly in transforming that part of a town, what College Town has meant to the program, what it's meant to the game day atmosphere is hard to really put into words, and whether it be for the spring game, whether it be for a random night during the summer, And certainly as we get closer to the football season, we'll talk more about them. But just three fantastic options and three people or three places that we would ask that you keep in mind and how much they have made or how instrumental they've been in the kind of maturation of this podcast is also hard to put into words. So thank you as always to them and what they've meant to the Nolcast.
No doubt, man. Great sponsor and everybody. Oh, by the way, shout out also to the nurse who helped my mom at the hospital. She fractured her foot. So somehow we got talking and realized that her son was Bud Elliott of the Nolcast. And they chatted for a while about that. And he was asking her, hey, is it Madison Social Place really as good as they say it is? Because he hadn't been up to Tallahassee in a while. And she was able to, despite the fact she broke her foot, give him a strong endorsement there. So awesome work. And she said he was really nice. So fortunately, I forget your name. I'm not going to text my mom at 11:20 at night to ask her what the nurse's name was, but she's doing better.
If you happen to be that nurse, hit us up on Twitter and we will we'll cover your next round at Madison Social. We'll send you a gift card. Job well done there. Thank you for taking care of Mrs. Elliott, Mama Elliott there. And that is a strange confluence of events that they would begin talking about the Nolcast, but that's pretty fantastic as well.
Ingram, let's end on this question, all right? Do you feel better, worse, about the same coming out of spring, about this team, about his fortunes for this year, as you did going into spring?
I think I probably feel maybe slightly more optimistic, but you know, if I had to give you a straight answer, I would feel more or less the same as I did entering spring. I like, for all the reasons that I said, I would lean a little bit more towards this spring being a success. I'm not backing away from. I like the emergence of a ridiculously talented running back. I like what you have as a second option at quarterback. I like some of the emergence of the young talent in the secondary, but those were all kind of things that I thought you were going to see. So I was more pleased by the confirmation of what I thought previously existed. I still have, like we talked in the last podcast, as to whether or not we really want to talk about this national championship conversation with this team as it's currently put together. And I'm not going to back away from that. I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment if that's a real conversation you're having and those are your expectations. Having said that, you know, there's certainly some pieces there that would lend the fan base to dream big if everything that we discussed comes to fruition and you've get a higher level of play at offensive line, if you develop into a team that's really comfortable relying on your running game, if you stay healthy along the defensive line, and if you have just this NFL player running around in your secondary who happens to have eligibility in college left, then yeah, you can dream as big as you want to with this team. But I'm not sure that anything that took place in spring is really going to change my internal expectations of what I hope for, or what I look for out of this team come August.
I think I'm a little bit more optimistic. And you nailed it when you said this really just depends on how optimistic you were coming into spring. Like if you were a type of person who expected a QB who's never been accurate to all of a sudden become accurate, well, you're probably disappointed right now. Or if you expected Florida State to have excellent pass protection after losing the best offensive tackle they've ever had under Jimbo Fisher and Rod Johnson to the league early, you're probably disappointed right now. But I didn't expect either of those things. So I think because of the better functional defensive line depth than I even thought they would have, because of a guy like a Bavion Johnson, because it looks like Cole Minshew at guard has taken another step, you know, Ball looked better than I thought he was going to look, to be honest. Because Cam Akers came in and absolutely was the truth from day one, I'm slightly more optimistic. You know, and there's not really... I think this team has a hell of a chance to win double-digit games again. A hell of a chance. That's that's another great season. We'll see what happens, obviously. But yeah, I'm a little more optimistic than I was coming in.
That's fair. I mean, it more or less sounds like we're kind of, it's not necessarily that we're talking about different things, but you're couching this in double digit expectations, and I'm having more conversation as to the part of the fan base that expects this team to potentially compete for a national championship. So a little bit of two different prisms in which we're viewing the season and the expectations that we wrap it in. But look, ultimately spring is about getting kids experience, making the most out of the early enrollees and taking advantage or trying to leverage that opportunity as much as possible. Yada, yada, yada. Ultimately, spring is about getting through it and being healthy. So for all the reasons to be optimistic, that is what we'll always return to. Nobody sustained an injury that we're aware of or have any reason to expect that anybody sustained an injury that's going to prevent their preparation for next year. And that in and of itself is a massive thing to be able to say after going through spring practice. So I think a lot to take away, a lot to be pretty excited about, a lot to, you know, for us to look after or look over and a lot of probably over analysis and what this team and how it matches up with Alabama. So look, we've got 4 months leading into that game. That's not something we're going to start on this podcast right now, but obviously that's just the natural progression. You look towards game one, and anytime you play Alabama or a team the quality of Alabama, that's going to dominate the conversation. So I think you had as good of a spring as you could hope for, and you put yourself in a place to make the most out of the year that lies ahead. So in that regard, reason to be optimistic, and we will follow this team, try to keep you as up to date as possible through the summer months. And look, it's going to be a really interesting year, and we'll answer a lot of the questions that arose last year, and how Florida State comes out of the gate and what it looks like will ultimately be kind of the final point on the 2016 season as to, was it the first half of the season or was it the second half of the season as far as the trajectory overall of the program? So from the most macro of references, that's what ultimately will be answered this year. And I really look forward to covering this team, covering this program, and continue to be able to put podcasts like this one together.
All right, bud. I'll talk to you soon. What do we do these usually weekly in the off season?
We will do these weekly. We may try to get together sometime later this week to do a recruiting. We'll touch recruiting one or two more times and then not have it be as much of a focal point. But there is a lot to talk about on the recruiting trail in both 2018 and 2019. So we'll get together sometime in the near future and have that be the predominant focus of our conversation.
All right. Until then, guys, appreciate y'all listening. 5 stars as always on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever else. If there's something we really need to get on as far as the podcast platform, let us know. I mean, I think we're on most of the big ones at this point. We've been doing this for about 7 years. But, you know, hey, always open to improving. So take care.